It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes with a relentless competitive attitude.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com as well as the mobile app. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we're here to break down everything related to the New York Giants. Multiple ways you can interact with us here on the program. 201-939-4513. You could also use hashtag Giants Chat. As we now start to look towards the offseason, we'll get into the announcement that Dave Gettleman is retiring. The search obviously will begin for a new general manager. And then a number of players spoke yesterday in their final media sessions before they then go their separate ways until they return for off-season workouts. So a lot to delve into, and a reminder, you can find the archive of this show and our entire podcast network on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at giants.com/podcast. So, Jeff, I think where we should probably start is the player press conferences. Mm-hmm. Various players spoke. I'll tell you what I thought my major takeaway was, and then I'm certainly curious your thought.
Okay.
What I took away was more of the medical news from mm-hmm. some of the players that are dealing with injuries, specifically Daniel Jones and Nick Gates. Daniel had mentioned that he has no contact that he could take part in until August, which is not a stunner, Jeff, because if you look at the offseason schedule, right, he's not going to be involved in contact anyway, and that he, though, is clear to lift, to run and throw. So there's no limitations in terms of him doing that. It's just a matter of no contact till obviously training camp starts in August.
Well, I think the big thing is that there's no surgery. So that's a good sign. And, you know, what do quarterbacks do anyways? They do lift, believe it or not. They do run and they throw. So those are all good things. And they wear a red jersey at practice on any type of practice, whether it's OTAs or mini camps or anything like that, so you can't touch the guy anyways. So he'll be fine. I mean, that was good news, and I'd like to hear that too. I thought he had some good things to say. You know, one thing that I took out of his interview yesterday was the fact that somebody asked him about another new offensive coordinator, another new system, and he had mentioned that, you know, things change every year anyway. So, you know, maybe not completely, but he's going to get something new, and most likely, I don't know that, but, you know, the way that it's going and – if there is a new offensive coordinator, there certainly will be a new system, and he should be able to pick it up. He went to Duke, for God's sakes.
Yes, that hopefully will give him the ability to navigate. But I'm glad you brought that up, Jeff, because you do bring up an interesting point. I would say if we were having this conversation entering year three and we were speculating on could he have three offensive coordinators in 3 years, my level of concern, I think, would be a little bit higher. I think given where the offense went this season, the struggles. I think if you're Joe Judge, you're at this point not worried about your quarterback, right, having to learn a new system. You need to do whatever is humanly possible to fix the offense at this point.
You need to do everything that's humanly possible to get that whole offense out of your mind.
That's one way to put it, yes.
You know, so I think that, yeah, I mean – again, it's football, right? So most of these systems are very, very similar. It's terminology is what happens. And so one plays are in one system is called this, and in another system is called that. So they're basically the same plays, and he'll be able to figure it out and pick it up. But, yeah, I agree with you because there isn't a whole lot of things that they did well under this current system. So get something else new in here, and I'm all for that.
Terms of moving personnel around, getting the quarterback at a different spot. I mean, you could go in so many different directions. So that, to me, in addition to searching for a new GM, is clearly the top two priorities. And once again, we'll get more into that as we move forward. As far as the other injury news goes, Nick Gates spoke to the media. And this was really, Jeff, the first time we heard from him
since he suffered the injury.
Yeah, and he also was asked about, similar to Daniel Jones, what's your timeline? When do you anticipate getting back on the field? And I don't want to put words in Nick Gates' mouth, but the way that I interpreted it, I think there's a lot of uncertainty, Jeff. And once again, this is my opinion. From listening to what Nick Gates had to say, he didn't say that he was ultra-aggressive, that he's going to get back on the field in a few months or even training camp. I mean, he even said whether it's this year or next year. I mean, we're not talking months. He used the terminology years. So right now, I think it's – at this point, a very touch-and-go type of process. His priority is to rehab. He says he's been doing that for the last few months. The good news is he indicated he doesn't need multiple surgeries, that all of the procedures were taken care of over a few months ago. So now it's a matter of gaining confidence in the leg to inch closer to perhaps doing some on-field work.
Yeah, and that's just like any other injury. You know, everybody's different. Everybody heals quicker or slower than each other. So I think that if it's me, I'm thinking, okay, I've got Nick Gates under contract. I've got him on the roster. I'm guessing that, you know, he'll be probably a pup guy, you know, as we go, or you just don't know. But the fact that he doesn't have to have any further surgeries as indicated, you never know. But from an organizational standpoint, Lance, I think you have to consider availability and move in the right direction as far as replacing or adding to the roster, you know, at his position, because sure, you can't count on him. And that's not in a bad way. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate the medical part of it. You just can't count on him being a starter. So even though he is the starter, as you move closer to that. And by the way, you know, that's where a lot of the free agency and the draft will take care of itself. Whatever the new GM comes in and wants to do with the offensive line, these are all things. But, you know, again, pointing in the right direction that Nick Gates is doing better was a nice thing to see. I was excited about seeing him when he popped up on the podium yesterday, because I wasn't thinking that we would see him.
Definitely encouraging news. Remember, Jeff, the injury happened in week two, the first matchup against Washington. Mm-hmm. So, and that, when we were talking about that game, when we were previewing the second matchup, week, right, we were talking about it seemed like it was ages ago. So, yeah. I mean, just think about how long it's been since he's been out of the lineup. I'm with you, though. And you bring up a good point about it's going to be in the hands of the general manager and the offensive coaching staff in terms of where they want to go with respect to the offensive line personnel-wise. But I think whoever is steering the ship, I think you have to come into this offseason not banking on that Nick Gates is going to be ready to go week one of the 2022 season. You can't pencil it in. You can't pen it in. I think you have to feel good that he's on the road to recovery, he's on the road to rehab, but if you come into the season saying he's absolutely going to be your starter at center, I think that's rolling the dice a little bit, because remember, Jeff, we're talking about a significant injury. It was a lower left leg fracture.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are injuries where, and I'm not saying that this is the case, but there's a reason why people throw out the term career-threatening, perhaps.
Of course.
Because it's a significant injury which required a lot of surgery. So I think you have to operate that, hey, if he's ready to go week one, that would be possibly the best case scenario. And worst case scenario is he's not ready, but he's providing depth, right, on your chart, and maybe you get him back at some point in the season. But you can't operate that you can absolutely rely on him day one.
100%. You can't. You move on. And I don't mean that in a sarcastic way. I mean,
not at all.
You have to plan accordingly. And whoever this new general manager is, they're going to address that offensive line, I would imagine, immediately. And so, you know, I'm guessing, just from my experience, when you see things like this happen, is that there's going to be a lot of turnover. I mean, we've talked about this before, Lance, that you can't come in and expect to turn over the whole offensive line. And you know, you just can't do that. So there will be some attrition there, but there's also some holdovers. But you know, I think the most important thing, and we'll get into this, I'm certainly down the road, but the draft and what's available this year when it comes to the offensive line position, it's pretty exciting. And, you know, I'm a proponent, and I think I've mentioned to you guys about this. I feel like my plan, if I had to, and this is just my plan, it would be one splash in free agency at the offensive line position, whether it's at, you know, the guards, tackles, centers, whatever it is, and then addressing the other part of it in the draft. And trust me, it's happened before where amazingly how if you just add one quality player, I mean a quality player, a guy that's really good, and then you draft somebody else, and the addition of one or two guys on that offensive line with Andrew Thomas, that offensive line can improve pretty quickly. It really can. So it's just going to be patience, and you know, the draft can't get here soon enough.
Well, don't rush our lives too much, Jeff, because then before you know it, conversations are going to go every which way. But in all seriousness, I think what you're laying out is reasonable. If you look at some other teams, Kansas City is a team that comes to mind. They really revamped their line, How did they do it? They did it a combination to what you're talking about, Jeff. They did Chargers. A little bit in free agency with Joe Tooney, and then they acquired Orlando Brown, and they drafted Creed Humphrey. So, you know, there is a mix. You brought up the Chargers. Okay, there's another good example. They draft Rashawn Slater. They bring in Corey Linsley and Matt Filer in free agency. And we could go around the league. There's certainly ways that in the course of one offseason, you could bring in three guys, let's say, in some combo. And remember, it's all going to be banking on, Jeff, at the end of the day, those guys producing. You and I could sit down, right? We can map out, all right, we're going to bring in these four guys. At the end of the day, they still need to produce, right? I mean, that's the name of the game, because we've had this conversation with respect to the draft, and I know we'll get phone calls over the offseason, and callers will say, I want the Giants to draft these two guys in the first round, and that's great. But at the end of the day, those guys have to make an impact. And this is the conversation, Jeff, you and I, we've been having this on the post-game show all season. We've been having it here on BBKL. And I want to emphasize it once again. It's not the 2022 draft class that is just going to come to the rescue. No. If the team is going to make a significant move forward, okay, meaning progress, making a jump, you're going to need the accumulation of, regardless of what direction the new GM wants to take this team, you still are not going to abandon ship, Jeff, in terms of who you drafted over the last 2 years prior. Those classes in conjunction with 2022, that's what maybe gets you to the position where you make a little bit of a push.
Correct. And we've talked about the failure when it comes to that in the past as far as building your roster in depth through the draft at certain positions, and that would be the offensive line. I think that it's been, you know, miserably. It's not has been what you wanted, because you look at the depth of this team and there isn't any. You can't sit there and tell me that this offensive line has extreme depth. It just doesn't. So you start in 2022. You start in bringing back some of the guys that went out that were hurt this year. You remember, we have failed to mention about Lemieux.
Shane Lemieux,
another guy that is going to come back from
injury. Another notable injury, though, too, Jeff. Sure. We're talking about the patellar tendon, which is a significant injury as well.
So if you get both of those guys back, and for some reason that they don't become your starters, but they're able to be some sort of a backups, you know, although Nick Gates was not produced through the draft, but Shane Lemieux was. And, you know, now you go out and, again, Matt Parrott is another one that's just hurt. And that's another injury.
Torn ACL. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about three of the penciled in starters for 2021 with all three significant injuries, and their playing time, you know, as far as Matt Parrott's tried to get him in there, but it didn't work. So anyways, I think that that's the direction that you have to go, and you have to pay close attention to it. And I think that that's the building blocks of this offense. Whether, you know, who the offensive coordinator is that's going to come in here and the new offensive line coach, they're going to have to be able to, you know, fix this thing pretty quickly. But I think we all have to be very patient in the fact that, like you said, Lance, is that this cannot just be fixed overnight. This isn't just a, you know, you go out and get four guys and plug them in there, and the next thing you know, they're the best offensive lineman group in the league. It's just not going to happen.
Well, because I'll go back to, we were bringing up other examples, which I think is great. So you have some tangible evidence. Kansas City's offensive line, it was not a finished product immediately. They had some ups and downs if you go to the early stages of the season. I thought the Chargers' offensive line played well, but here's the thing. What's crazy, the Chargers, and they did have that final game of the season with a play-in opportunity, Jeff, but despite them revamping their offensive line, they still didn't make the playoffs this year. So, you know, it just goes to show you that we could talk about, once again, revamping that area, and that's well taken. But there's other facets that the Giants need to improve, aside from the offensive line, before we start saying that they've taken that significant jump forward.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. It's going to be very interesting. I mean, you know, you look at Billy Price and Matt Sakura, they're free agents. So, and so is Nate Solder. So there's three of your guys there.
And that, Will Hernandez as well. Yeah.
So, you know, you that just goes to show you, if none of those guys are back, there's four players right there that are, they're gone, and you've got to replace them in terms of starting and in terms of depth. So a lot of new additions, I would imagine, that's coming up.
Well, plus, Jeff, the three guys that we just talked about coming off of significant injuries.
Yeah.
So if you look at the four free agents, the three players dealing with injury who we said you can't guarantee, and especially remember, Matt Paire tore his ACL in the latter part of the season.
Right.
So that's going to impact his ability to get back for the start of next year. That means that seven offensive linemen, Jeff, that have question marks next to them in terms of availability for week one next season. So it's not just, by the way, as we're having this conversation, it's not just about who your starters are going to be. It's also about who's going to be your sixth, your seventh, your eighth offensive lineman. Jeff, I would say that has to be addressed as much as the starters do because of the questions and issues on top of the injuries.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a daunting task to go try to find those types of players that really could contribute if they get in, you know? I mean, because obviously if they're backups, they're not ready to start, or they have started and they're just not a starter anymore. But that's the key, because you can have depth, and every team has it, but how good is it? That's the million-dollar question. How good is your depth? And because in today's world in the National Football League with COVID, we don't know when this is going to end. You know, so as far as we know, this is probably going to go into next year, and the protocols are still going to be the same. And, you know, you're going to be missing guys because of it. And then you've also got the day-to-day injuries that happen. So you have got to build your roster with some good quality, really good quality depth, because you never know where that one starter is going to be out for a significant amount of time. And your team might be rolling. And God forbid, if you don't have great depth at your offensive line position, and now all of a sudden you've got a great running game, and now it's going to take a hit, and because you don't have depth at the offensive line. I honestly look at this offense from from afar, and I look at Kenny Golladay. Okay, was Kenny Golladay a first round draft pick?
No, he was a third rounder.
He was a third rounder. So Saquon Barkley. You've got Daniel Jones.
Yep.
You've got Andrew Thomas. You've got Kadarius Toney. I mean, these are all first-round draft picks on this offense. So, I mean, this offense on paper with a new coordinator and a revamped offensive line, there's only one way to go. It's got to be up.
You would hope. Not to be a Debbie Downer, but remember, the point per game, we had this conversation last season. Didn't we say this? They averaged 17.5 points per game. Yeah. We said, well, it can only go up. Well, actually, it went down.
14.7 is what we were talking about the other day in the postgame show, which, I mean, I don't know how. That's hard to do. I mean, it really is. So, I mean, but my point is that this offense has got a lot of really good players when it comes to – you know, what you're going to look at next
year. There's pieces there. I think that's what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, so those players that I just mentioned are they're all pretty good playmakers. You know, you just got to get some consistency with them, and they are going to be in, Golladay is a guy we know came with a history of injury, so he just needs to stay healthy. Kadarius Toney, I mean, he played in 10 games this year, but it just wasn't, much. Very spotty. And, I mean, Andrew Thomas had that ankle, but, you know, these are guys, if you can keep them healthy, it'll add to the production of your offense because they're all first-round draft picks. They're good players.
I'm with you, Jeff. I think the other thing, though, to take into consideration, and this is, I think, what you were hitting on earlier, is in the COVID world that we live in, and nobody has a crystal ball, we don't know what the structure of the 2022 season is, but I think right now you have to operate that. If the protocols are still in place and nothing has drastically changed, then you have to prepare for you can lose a guy, right, for a game, and it's got nothing to do with injury, which is why it's not just about the depth on the offensive line, Jeff. It's also how do you feel about your wide receivers? How do you feel about your running backs so that in the event you lose somebody like a Kadarius Toney for the high volume of games, can you still run what you have set within your offensive scheme? That's also, I think, something that you need to keep in mind when building a roster right now.
Yeah, and you know, in the last 2 years, building a roster has been significantly different because of the ability to put players up and down on your practice squad and being able to have veterans on there, you know. I like it. I feel like it's, you need it, especially in the environment that we play today. When all this goes away, do you still want to keep it that way? I would imagine some people do, but maybe it's tweaked just a little bit where there's just a certain amount of times you can do some of those transactions. But I feel like it's really gives the the ability to have your younger players develop in an arena that they're not, you know, getting first team rep, but they're around the organization, understanding how things, you know, the culture and how things work, and picking up the offense and things like that. So maybe one day, you know, there's always a lot of guys, Lance, that go out there, they're on a practice squad player, they've been brought in, and next thing you know, they're just ascending, and the team can't, they got to sign the guy on the active roster, because it's like, this guy is out here outworking everybody on the practice field. He's catching football, I'm just like from a receiver standpoint, you know, running great routes, he's picking up the offense, he doesn't drop balls. I mean, why don't we have this guy playing for us on Sunday? And next thing you know, the guy becomes a, you know, a good player. And that's the developmental part of the practice squad that has to be emphasized and reinforced every single year by getting guys that you feel that you're going to be able to develop. You don't want to just have guys on your practice squad that are there just the taxi squad guys. It just, they don't, you don't ever want them to play for you. You know, and it's hard to find a lot of those guys, but hopefully you can, through your scouting department and some of the guys on other rosters that you can pick off, you got to build it, and that's what you got to do. This team inevitably needs depth at every single position there is in on this team. It has to be, and it has to be built through the draft and through some of your free agents that you're hoping that maybe pan out for you.
The best example I could give you that comes to mind just as a means of comparison in this NFL season, the Colts played the Cardinals on Christmas. If you recall, Jeff, they lost 4 of their 5 starting offensive linemen between injuries and COVID, and some went down during the game, and they're plugging in guys left and right on the sideline, and they still won that game. I know they didn't make the playoffs. I'm not making it a big picture thing, but there's an example of you never know when you're going to get hit. It could be right in the midst of a game, and you can't be thinking about, well, I wish in August we had this conversation to feel better about how many tackles and guards we have on the roster. You have to have these conversations months in advance because you need to prepare for what if. It's like having insurance, right, Jeff, in terms
of what it is.
Home insurance, whatever you want to label
it's player insurance.
You don't, right? You never want to use it, right? You never want to have to tap into it, but the reason why you have it is if so-and-so takes place. Yeah. It's no different than a depth chart in the National Football League. You never want to get to your 5th wide receiver. You never want to get to your 7th offensive lineman. But you have to live in reality that it could very well happen. And injuries are the nature of the beast. And, Jeff, I know we've had a lot of conversations this season, and the Giants have been hit by injuries to a nth degree compared to other teams. I get that. But I feel like we've also been having a lot of conversations about injuries in previous years, and you can only continue to bring that up every year. Eventually, you have to have an answer or response to say, hey, we're going to be able to overcome this because I'll give you these 3 teams, and they were hit by the injury bug, and they still found a way to keep their head above water.
And I think you look at the common denominator, right? What is the common denominator there for those teams that were able to get by with the depth when their starters went out? I think the common denominator is their scouting, their general manager, and the way that they pick players for the depth of the roster. That makes a difference. You know, I mean, if you're out there picking players that just aren't worth it, you know what, and they can't play, then that's, yeah, we got depth here, but the depth is nothing. It's just a name on a nameplate above a locker. It's not really anything. There's no substance. I need depth, and I need players that I can count on, and I have to put the onus on the general manager, his scouting department, and how they evaluate players to get guys in here that I feel comfortable with, that pass the eye test, the physical test, the mental test, and that they have the fortitude to come in here and be part of a team and develop and win, you know. And you got it, and it's not easy, because there's a lot of things that go involved in that: money, character, availability, health, ability, you know. So, you know, trying to find that perfect player is not all that easy sometimes, but I feel like I'd like to miss every once in a while than miss all the time, obviously.
Sure. Yes. I think you'd rather have a stronger
you know,
track
record. I don't mean to be Captain Obvious. I'm just trying to state, kind of create my point here, is that, you know, it all depends on, you know, your staff and who's picking these players and getting them in here and having a good scouting department and evaluation. And, you know, that's what we're going to talk a little bit about this. We can continue on with the players' interviews, but as we get into the general manager stuff, some of the things that I see that are so important outside of who the person is and developing talent, but you know, some of the responsibilities that the new general manager is going to see immediately when he comes in that he's going to have to address.
And we'll definitely delve into that, Jeff, because that's pretty much a branch of what we're talking about now in terms of priorities in the offseason, players to look for. And remember, when a new GM comes in, it's not just about the players that he's selecting. It's also about who he's going to surround himself on the staff. And that's going to be another big part of what the new GM will do. And we'll certainly get more into that in the wake of Dave Gettleman announcing his retirement yesterday and John Mara and Steve Tisch having a statement saying that they will begin the search immediately for a new general manager. Let's open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, and we check in with CJ in the Bronx to get us going here on Tuesday's edition. What's happening, CJ?
What's good, guys? I'm calling to talk about my offense coordinator, but first I want to get to what Jeff just said. Jeff, you've been punting in the league for 20-plus,
Yeah, I'm here.
You've been punting in the league for 20-plus years. Are all your special team coaches the same?
No.
Or did your special teams coordinators, punt coaches, help you get better every year?
Well, I think that, you know, it's kind of a different situation, honestly, CJ, because, you know, punters and kickers are self-taught. And most of the special teams, if not all of them, I don't think I've ever come across any in the ones that were my coaches that ever played the position. So they are there to help you, absolutely. You know, so you got to go out and I see where you're going here. Yeah, you know, good coaches are hard to come by. So, and once you get good coaches, you want to keep them, right?
Yeah. The thing I was getting at, because, yeah, as we saw from Gettleman's pass and his draft picks, he got players in there, but when they got on the defensive side, they played. We couldn't say there was no one that couldn't play in the NFL. On the offensive side, we've seen a lot of things missing. We've seen it, like, this is why I think number one person that needs to fix something is Judge getting his offensive coordinator. Whatever the GM wants to do, he's supposed to think 5 years down the line, protecting the franchise. On offense, we got talent, but we need someone like my number one person is Stoutland from the Eagles, the offensive line coach, and maybe if he wants to bring in Doug Peterson, that would be great too, but I can't just say it was just the players not doing it. Well, it's like a 50-50 job. 50-50 is like teamwork, what the NFL is. We got to do what we got to do. Coaches have to do what they have to do, put them in the right spots, make the right calls, do the preparations. Players got to execute to the fullest. I got to go
because
I got a customer.
All right, G. CJ, we'll let you go on that note and appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I don't think anything that the last caller said is off point. It certainly is a 50-50 relationship. Each component has to be met halfway. You need the players to execute, right? You could be the most creative play caller imaginable, Jeff, right?
Yeah.
You put all
yeah.
of your guys in the perfect spot. If the guys don't execute, they don't run the plays well, it defeats the purpose of your creativity. And then you could have an overwhelming amount of talent, but you don't tap into that because you don't necessarily put those players in the best position to succeed. So it goes both ways. I don't think, once again, anybody would be disputing that. And Joe Judge said, even after the Washington game, that fixing the offense, and I'm paraphrasing his words, is clearly the number one priority in terms of where he's coming from and what has to be fixed. And if that's a combination of personnel and staff decisions, then so be it. But yeah, they know that they have to. Okay, remember, as Jeff and I were talking about earlier, the offense, when it's all said and done, we're talking about an offense that was averaging under 15 points per game. You show me a team in the National Football League, Jeff, that even scratches the surface of the playoff hunt. Forget the playoffs, okay? Let's just talk about playoff hunt if I put a team under that umbrella. You show me a team in NFL history, recent, past, centuries ago, that ever said we averaged under 15 points per game and we kept ourselves in the mix. You're not going to find it.
You can't, especially in today's world. There's no way. There is absolutely no way. You know, and I think the exciting part of it, if there is one for the fans, is that hopefully that the Joe Judge, the new general manager, and the new offensive coordinator, whoever the new offensive coordinator is creative. And it becomes, you know, like, I mean, how many times was this offense so conservative and that you just like, I mean, it's just mundane. Right. And again, that has to do with what? That has to do with the talent that's in front of you.
Sure.
So I can't run or be creative plays if I don't have the ability to have the players run it and do it correctly. Okay, so if I want to be a good screen team, okay, do I have the running back to do it? Absolutely. Both Booker and Barkley can catch the football out of the backfield and run great screens. Do I have the offensive linemen that can hold their blocks and then get out there and let their guys go and then set up the screen game? No. That's why the Giants don't run any screens, because they don't work. They don't work. And by the way, the screens are a big part of National Football League offensive systems, okay, whether they're wide receiver screens, all right? And then you also have the ability to run. Kadarius Toney was drafted because he's going to be your playmaker. He's going to be your Tyreek Hill, the guy that you can put and mismatch all over the place through motions and things like that. Did you see any type of motions in the last game? No, because you can't. Jake Fromm, he's a quarterback, but he doesn't understand the offense to be able to match up. That's what motion's used for. Motion is used to set, you know, you get mismatches. I'm going to put Evan Engram, I'm going to send him in motion, and he's going to get lined up on the linebacker over there that he can't cover him. That's what you do, but they couldn't even do that last week. So I think it's important to understand that the next offensive coordinator has to be creative, has to be successful in the way that he runs this offense, and being a little bit more aggressive than the one that was here before. Because, I mean, and by the way, I mean, it's just the red zone. You can't, I beat this into everybody, and you know this, is that the red zone is all about running the football. Because if you can't do it, then the team knows what you're going to try to do, and that's throw the ball, and they're just going to cover. They're going to play coverage on you, and you're not going to win. So I think that I still think the Giants want to run the football. That is the bread and butter of this organization, and for history behind the Giants have always been able to be a good running football, tough, physical team, and I think that that's what Joe Judge wants. But you got to find the horses up front, and they got to produce, and then the offense will open itself up to a lot of exciting plays and things that people, the Giants fans, will like to come and watch.
Giants were dead last in the NFL in red zone efficiency, and that was 45%. And they were dead last in 2020. So that's two straight years where they finished in the bottom of the league. Now, it was hard to even get into the red zone in the last six games because of the inability, like you said, with the personnel fitting what they wanted to run. And they were conservative because they were basically saying to themselves, we just want to protect our defense at this point, because we know between the turnovers on offense and the lack of personnel, we're very hard-pressed in order to consistently put points on the board. But I would agree with you, Jeff. I think your point is well taken. You have to run the football. Even if your opponent knows you want to run the football, it should be irrelevant. Yeah. And whether or not that's their desire or it fits the profile of the franchise, as you were talking about, Jeff, I don't even know if that's important, because the bottom line is, assuming Daniel Jones is healthy next season, you do not want him to have to put on the cape and play hero ball.
No.
Because I don't think that's a good recipe for his success. So that's more of a reason why you need to be able to run the football, because you want to protect your quarterback. You don't want to have your quarterback throwing the ball 35 to 40 times and thinking that that's going to lead to success all the time. It will at times, but it's not a recipe to do that over 17 games.
Well, no, you can't do it every week, because, you know, I'm going to come up against a, you know, I'm just throwing teams out, you know, a Philadelphia Eagles team that's beat up in the secondary, and I know that I'm going to be able to throw the football on them because I can't run it. They're a great run defense. So, but next week I'm going to go up a team that's very, you know, they're pretty balanced, both offense, defensively running the football and covering. So what, I just can't come like, well, I threw the ball 46 times last week. It was very effective. I'm going to do it again this week. No, you're not. You're not going to do it.
So, it's a matchup-driven league.
100%. Every week is different. And by the way, you have to, as players, you have to adjust to that. So when you get your game plan, but there's, you know, there's a base. Your base offense is built around true concepts of what you're going to do day in and day out, and then you create plays off of those. And that's where the matchups come from. So if we have a base offense that we're going to run, and these are the running plays, then we're going to put in motion, then we're going to put in some different things, play actions. You know, that we run off of the base offense, and that's how the offense evolves during the season, too, because of injuries. And, by the way, because of maybe the attrition of a player or even the success of a player. Maybe somebody just like Kadarius Toney comes out of nowhere and is like, this dude's leading the NFL in receiving. Well, we got to get the ball to him. But we got to be creative how we get the ball to him, because everybody's going to cover him, you know. So, but then that leaves some other guys open. You know, Kenny Golladay and you know, maybe the Giants, I don't know about Evan Engram coming back. I would doubt it. I think it's time for him to, I think he wants to, I know he said yesterday, and he was very, very, I think he was very truthful about this, wanting to come back. I think he likes it here. I think Joe Judge likes him. I think he likes the organization. But, you know, sometimes the grass is greener on the other side. And you as a five-year player, and I know this from experience, is that, you know, it's nice to go out and test the waters because, you know, you may find a very lengthy career somewhere else that somebody utilizes your talents in a different way and you all of a sudden become a really good football player. That's the chance that you take as the Giants is letting your free agents go somewhere else, and we've seen that happen where they leave here and they go play and they, you know, they become very good players, but you can't keep everybody.
And also it depends on what the new GM thinks of some of these players as well, who has no connection to them because he didn't necessarily draft them. New perspective, remember, also leads to, you know, a new direction from that standpoint. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Scott is in New Mexico, and he joins us. What's happening, Scott?
Hey, guys. This was one of the best dissertations of breaking down the Giants that I've heard over the last 2 months.
Good, thank you.
Everything you said was accurate on both of you guys. But I think the reason the Giants finished the way they do it, my favorite coach of all time was Vince Lombardi. I think he summed it up best. The measure of who we are is whatever we do with what we have, and we didn't have much. Damn. And that's why we finished 4-13. But I have an issue. I'm going to read off some players. You already addressed Evan Engram, but I don't see Nate Solder coming back. Lance, I believe you're right. Nick Gates will probably take him. less time to come back into the lineup. Hernandez took a step backwards. Shane Lemieux has the injury, but he was never known as a great pass blocker, as good run blocker. You still don't know the status of Daniel Jones or Saquon Barkley. We're going to have the 5th and 7th round picks in the draft. And so far as the wide receivers, Darius Tooney had problems at the University of Florida with injuries, and we already know that Galladay had a hip injury the year before we paid him this money that we paid him. So wide receiver is an issue, I think, as well. But my real issue is one thing that I hope you guys can address. If you're hiring a new general manager, how does he interface with Joe Judge? And I'll give you an example, because who's going to have the final, final role in decision-making? Because Joe Judge is used to the lineup that he had, and now you're bringing in a general manager. And with a new general manager, for example, say, and I'm making this a hypothetical so it's easy to understand. Say you wanted to trade Dexter Lawrence, just for argument's sake, and that's what the general manager wanted to do. And Joe Judge says, no, we want to keep him in the lineup. Who makes the final decision? Because the reason I'm asking the question is the general manager is sort of hamstringed a little bit because he has to now work with a coach he may not want to work with, yet the dictates of the Mara family or the Fish family says we want Joe Judge. And I had a discussion with you, Jeff, and Paul a long time ago. I don't care who the general manager is, and I don't care who the coach is, but in order to have a cohesive unit and grow, those two have to be in sync. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean? That limits the kind of general manager you're looking for, because they have to work with Joe Judge. And are there going to be times where he's going to disagree, and what happens at that point? I was wondering if you could address that issue.
Well, Scott, we'll discuss that, and we'll let you go on that note. Appreciate the phone call.
Okay, thanks.
The first thing that I want to preface all of our statements is, and Jeff, I mentioned this at the tail end of the show, let's not get ahead of ourselves. And what I mean by that is we don't know what the Giants are thinking and what their conversations have been behind closed doors. Let's see who they bring in as the general manager and then what they empower the GM to ultimately decide, Jeff. We don't know. You know, there could be some dominoes that come into play. Right now, the only thing we can operate under is that Dave Gettleman retired and they need to find a new general manager. Anything else beyond that, at this point, I don't think is 100% in place, because a lot of it may be ownership saying, who we bring in as general manager, Jeff, we're going to give them the leeway then to make whatever changes they want. So I just want to preface our statements. However, if we're operating under what the caller was getting at, that you bring in a general manager and they have to work with a pre-existing head coach, Every team, Jeff, is different, and you can maybe speak to this because you've been with a lot of organizations, but I will say this. Normally, in the event of a tie, so that hypothetical, so let's say the GM wants to trade a player, the coach maybe is not as itchy. More often than not, you normally have rules and regulations in place that you've already worked out that in the event you get to there, and I would say more often than not, the owner is the person that probably steps in and decides the tiebreaker. That's at least from conversations I've had with individuals that have worked in the front office. That's normally how it works, where the owner then would be called in to make the ultimate decision if both individuals are not on the same page.
Yeah, and I think those are for the big, those are big decisions, right? I mean, like for a Leonard Williams kind of thing, you know, something like that, you know, but for the day-to-day operations about players coming and going, you know, I think you have to give. And again, this can be construed a lot of different ways, right? So, and people will always talk about the symmetry between the head coach and the general manager. You like to hire them together, you fire them together, right? So that's they're joined at the hip. Well, what happens when they're not joined at the hip? You're kind of, it's a forced marriage, right? So you're hoping that they get along. But I think that regardless of that, there has to be a chain of command. And in that chain of command, you mentioned it, I think it is up front. And right away, it's established that if this GM, we want to hire you, are you comfortable with X, Y, and Z in this chain of command? And maybe those things are gone over in this meeting and things like that, you know? So, because I feel like Joe Judge is a guy that would love to have some autonomy over the roster.
I think most coaches would all of them, they'd want an influence in terms of picking who they're ultimately going to coach.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because I feel like it's almost one of those things where, you know, I don't want to play this guy because I don't have confidence in him. And you guys are making me keep him because he's, you know, he's a cap. I get rid of him, you know, whatever. But I don't want to play the guy. Well, we really like him. Our scouting department has him ranked high and da-da-da-da-da. It's like, so there's where you have the rub, right? And I can imagine that happens all the time. But I feel like in order for the Giants to be able to get a quality general manager, they're going to have to say to them one of two things. Number one, we want you to be our general manager. As we know that we want to make changes, we're going, as far as I know, outside the building. You're outside the building. You're not inside the building. We're hiring outside the building the first time in a long, long time. We would like to give you all the power to do this and that. Do you want to stay with Joe Judge and give him the decision? Or they say to him, listen, we're keeping Joe Judge, all right? So if you want to take this job, you're going to work with him for at least a year, right? Next year, we'll see what happens. And so there's all kinds of these conversations. But the bottom line here when we're talking about this, Lance, is that, you know, how can those two guys get along to be able to make good decisions for the best of the team? And I don't think it's easy. To be honest with you, unless you find somebody that they have worked together before. And I know that the names that we're seeing that have been published in the news recently, there's a lot of, not a lot, there's a few guys that have worked with Joe Judge on those lists. And so maybe that comes into effect. Who knows?
Well, the NFL is also a small community, so most people cross
paths, right?
Yeah, even if you didn't work directly with them, maybe you know of them through somebody.
Yeah.
The relationship between the general manager and a head coach is important, okay? Let's
Very
not beat
important.
Around that.
Oh, my God.
We're not being naive here, but I also think it's also important to not be naive, Jeff, with respect to the fact that if you're a general manager candidate, okay, and once again, these are all hypothetical conversations we're having because we are not privy to what's going on behind closed doors in terms of those conversations. But if you're a general manager candidate, Jeff, and the Giants go to you and say, Joe Judge is your head coach, period, end of discussion, there's no wiggle room, then that's going to impact whether or not you want to take the job. Why would you take a job with parameters in place that you're not comfortable operating in? Because then to me, that's doomed right out of the gates. Is it not, Jeff? You're going to want to take a job where you maybe get to know Joe Judge previously and you're like, okay, you know what? I can work with him. This is fine. I think we have a very similar vision. Those conversations happen before everything is signed on the dotted line. That's the point. They're not going to throw two people together without previous conversation and a feel-it-out type of process. And the other thing, Jeff, that I'll throw out, in order to have true success, even if you put two individuals together that have not had a previous working relationship, A good GM is somebody that may love his players, but at the end of the day, he's going to listen to what his coaching staff wants to run from a schematic standpoint, Jeff, and he's going to listen to their feedback. Now, is he going to maybe bring them every single player they want? Sometimes from a financial perspective, that's not feasible. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes from the order of the draft, that's not feasible. But you're going to listen. You're going to get feedback. What happens mostly, Jeff, during the draft process is the assistants for each position evaluate the positions of those players in the draft class. Right. They then provide feedback to the front office. So there's some give and take there, but you're going to have to listen to what the scheme is about and what players they're looking for if you then want to bring in players that are ultimately going to reflect your job by having success on the field. If you bring in players and the coaching staff is not enamored by them, then that's going to impact your job because they're not going to be able to utilize them effectively.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there are some general managers out there that the Giants are going to be interviewing aren't general managers. They're player personnel guys. They're guys
scouting department.
This is a step up. This is a promotion they're looking for. So there are some people that will say, okay, you know what? I want to be a GM. This is my chance. And, you know, if I have to accept that the coach is going to be here, I'm taking the job because this, number one, is with the New York Football Giants. And by the way, if I can turn this thing around with or without Joe Judge, I will be king of the hill. You know, you think about that because I think it's a very attractive position for somebody in the sense that this organization is at such the doldrums right now that's only looking up is what you can do. This thing is going to get better. Well, you hope it is. And so, you know, build some success through there. I feel like if I was told that I need to keep Joe Judge no matter what, I look at the Denver Broncos and Vic Fangio. Look what happened there, okay? They get a new general manager last year. They keep Vic. And the day after the season this year, he's goodbye.
They went their separate ways, yeah.
And so I feel like that's probably one of the situations that if I'm a general manager and I'm being told that I have to keep Joe Judge and he doesn't have a great season, I have the ability to fire him next year. Okay, and
but those conversations have to take place before you take the gig, I guess is what I'm getting at.
And
so you understand that you have that flexibility in the wake that you do want to go in that direction.
I feel like that's the conversation that's going to be had because I feel, you know, talk about a takeaway from the Zoom meetings yesterday with these players. You heard all the guys tell you how much they love to play for Joe Judge. And, you know, there's always the people that are saying, well, that's not really true. Nobody likes this guy. You know, after what happened last week with the victory formation, do we want to play for a coach that's going to be like that? And, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on. But for the most part, every one of the guys that got up there was pretty happy about what was going on, including some of the guys that I feel like I can listen to and believe. You know, some of the other guys, it's just they're going to tell you what you want to hear. But I can read through the lines and a lot of some of these guys. And, like, I look like a guy like Logan Ryan is a guy I know that I feel like he speaks the truth. I think that he understands. He's been around. He's a leader. He's a cerebral guy. He's a smart guy. And I think that listening to him, you can kind of always tell what the pulse of the team is. And if you take away some of the things that he's saying, he's not telling you that it's all, you know, roses and whatever, rainbows and
lollipops. Yes.
You know, there are some problems but I think that somebody asked him yesterday, you remember, did you watch this or hear it when somebody said, you know, how is it that, you know, how do you like Joe Judge's practices?
Yep.
How does the guy, like, what kind of a question is that? I mean, what are you doing? You play football, you practice. I don't care how hard it is. You get paid to play, you do what I tell you to do on the field. That's the way it works, you know? And so, you know, these people, the press tries to get these guys to go against their coach by saying, oh, the practices, we know, we've heard they're so hard. And practices aren't hard. There's no practices that are hard in the National Football League anymore. I mean, they're out there for 2 hours. That's all they can be out there for.
Because the CBA limits it, yeah.
Yeah, go back 20 years ago, and when you're practicing for 3 hours a day, three times a day in training camp. I mean, that's when it got tough. It ain't tough now. I mean, it's not. But my point, so back on that. So I think that Joe Judge, I think he's liked by the players. I think the players play for him. And I think that's important to John Mara and Steve Tisch. I think that's very important. In fact, I know it's important to John Mara. He's told us that before. You know, the first thing I look at is, you know, has he lost the locker room? And the second thing is that, you know, can this team win a Super Bowl with the people that we have on it? And I think that's a great way to look at something. And right now, the team that you have in front of you, this team can't win a Super Bowl. You need to change a lot of things.
And by the way, Logan Ryan's response to that question was the fact that he doesn't know anything different because everyone who he's played for has come from the Bill Belichick school of thought, right? He played for Belichick, he played for Mike Vrabel, and now he's playing for Joe Judge. So when he was asked that question, he basically said, you'd have to ask somebody that's been with a variety of different coaches and schemes because all I know is this is the way we practice, period.
By the way, that's probably why he's a good player because that's the way he's been, you know, taught to practice. Because you spend more time on the practice field, people, than you do in the game. And if you – I always tell you guys this because it's the truth is, you know, you go in the morning, you go have breakfast, you go to your meetings, you go in on Wednesdays and Thursdays and Fridays. They're all different days as far as game planning. But you take what you learn in the classroom, you go out on the field, you apply it. After this practice is over, you go back in the meeting rooms and you're – you go over your practice to see how you screwed up. They tell you how you screwed up, and then the next day you do it over again. But where you win is that when you're able to take the stuff that you learned in the meeting room, take it out of the field, and then when you come back in after practice and you have meetings, they're sitting there going, I love what you're doing here. This is good. This is good stuff. If you have a lot of that, that's the preparation that we talk about, football guys. Preparation is the key to success. If you are preparing collectively in a way that you can yield success on Sunday, that's how you practice. That's how you go to work every day. Where you miss out is when there's lulls in there. Guys come to work, and you hear this from Joe Judge and the players, these guys come to work every day. They come to work every day. They come to work. I believe that, and that's important because when you don't come to work every day when you're only winning four games, it's hard to come to work every day because nobody wants to be there. And because of what? Well, it's just winning. I mean, losing is horrible. But they're keeping the focus, and that has to stay consistent. And if they can do that and get better players, then eventually this thing will get turned around.
Lance Meadow, Jeff Eagles with you here, Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. A reminder, Giants fans, you can secure your season tickets for the 2022 season today for only $100. Limited seats are available. You can speak with a Giants ticket representative now. Become a season ticket member. Call 888-NYG-1925. Let's head back to the phone lines. Cav is in Virginia joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, Cav?
Hey, how you doing, Lance and Jeff?
Good. How are you
doing? Very well. What do you got for us?
Good, good. Hey, so this is just a front office question. It's my second time calling, so I appreciate all you guys do.
Sure.
Maybe you guys could just hope you could shed some light with your experience, Jeff and Lance, with your just your connections and around the NFL and just ins and out of front offices around the league. When it comes to, let's start here. I was watching a Patricia Traynor, one of her YouTube things on the Giants, and one of the scouts was David Turner. I think you guys had him on sometime like last March. And I remember him talking about, you know, he has real good ties to Dave Gettleman and how he was like, it's not Dave Gettleman. If he gets one more year of drafting, he can turn this offensive line around. And so I'm thinking to myself, you know, he was saying some things in between the lines about front office, Dave Gettleman, and ownership. So I guess that's where my question lies is, you know, when it comes to making picks, when it comes to building the offensive line, when it comes from, I guess, Jeff, you kind of alluded to it with chain of command between Namara, the Tishes, and maybe this next general manager, how does that process actually look, you know, when it's given full autonomy to a general manager to say to go out there and actually build what he wants to do? Because I was getting the impression, listening to David Turner, that, you know, if Gettleman could actually do what he really wanted to do, he could really change this O-line around within this next draft, you know, this 2022 season. So my question is just if you guys can kind of shed some light, you know, I think Scott alluded to it. Jeff, you were just talking about it. So maybe it's a repeat question, but I'm still just trying to understand just that chain of command and that autonomy between the front office. How much do they have their hands involved in making these picks and what so forth? So if you could shed some light on just how that process works and the ins and outs, and you know, I'll take this off the air, guys, and I appreciate, guys, all you do.
All right, Kev. Appreciate the phone call.
That's
Jeff, I don't know
answer.
If you want to start with
no,
respect
go ahead.
To that.
You start. Okay. I know you have a lot of, you've talked to a lot of general managers over your time on the radio, and I'm sure that you can spread a little bit of light on this.
Well, I mean, I think it goes back to also the conversation, Jeff, that you and I were having earlier in the program. So, I mean, I don't think the question that we were just posed is off the deep end. It certainly relates. I'll go back to, first of all, I don't think there's one blueprint that every team follows. I don't think that, you know, all 32 teams, if you were to ask them, well, what's your power structure? And if you heard war stories, they'd be telling you it's the same exact thing. But I think most teams operate that the general manager normally makes the end-all, be-all decision when it comes time to submitting the draft pick. So, for example, they're going to get, Jeff, feedback from the scouting department. They're going to get feedback from the coaching staff in terms of how they put their board together, which they put together months upon months before the draft. It's an ongoing process. And then once they finalize their board, because everybody pretty much is at input, when it comes time to making the pick, if they're torn between two guys or so, whatever it may be, more often than not, assuming the power structure is that the general manager makes the selection, then the general manager is ultimately going to make that final choice. Now, he may run things by ownership, Jeff, and I think this is what you were getting at. If you're talking about trading a mega player, somebody that's been the face of the franchise, more often than not, normally the GM would run that by ownership just to get approval or sure. to tell them, hey, this is the direction I'm thinking of going in. But if we're talking about somebody that is a depth player or they're looking to boost somebody up from the practice squad, which is, Jeff, what you were wording, the day-to-day operations, those are things that you normally would not need to go to get permission from the higher up, because those are just basic things that a general manager and a head coaching staff have to do. We're talking about mega major changes involving, like, if you were to trade your quarterback or something like that,
or
in all likelihood.
Or your first-round draft pick. Who's it going to be? There's a lot of discussions there, you know?
Yeah, and you would run that maybe by ownership and so forth. But when it comes to the decision of a draft pick, and that's why I found it interesting, and I don't remember exactly who the individual he was mentioning that was listening to the interview, but when you throw out, well, a general manager did not have the ability to bring in the people that he wanted, and if we're to put some stock or substance behind that, well, I would, my follow-up question, Jeff, would be, well, were there salary cap restrictions? Is that why maybe you weren't able to do what you wanted to do? Or maybe the organization that you ran, the power structure is different in terms of there's more input from other areas, or the coach and the general manager on the same line. And I'd have to know the exact circumstance of that franchise to understand how those dynamics played out.
Yeah, I think that when we look at this collectively right now, I feel like whoever the new general manager is going to be, that they are going to, I think they need to give him a lot of power. I think they need to do that. And I think, because I don't know how it's running currently, and whatever is happening currently with Dave Gettleman and the scouting staff, the ownership, everything, you know, it hasn't worked. So, you know, this is the time to change. And whether that's all of a sudden now you say to the general manager is that we as ownership are going to step back and we're going to play a different role in this, okay? And we're going to turn the team over to you on a day-to-day operational basis. You know, you have final say in everything, with exception to, you know, we're going to talk about major implications when it comes down to certain things. But for the most part, it's yours. This is why we're hiring you. This is why we're interviewing 12 to 14 people for this job, because we don't want to change this in the next 2 or 3 to 5 years. This has to be something that we want you to be here as long as you can. And we want to get this franchise back to up and running the way it used to be. And with that in mind, we're putting faith in you to do that. And I just feel like that's how it has to be done. Now, I think that, you know, they're going to want the GM to have input and have influence over, you know, the team moving forward, but you got to give that to them, and you got to take a step back, because you're doing yourself no favor by just competing. You know, it's the whole thing, like, you know, if I just keep repeating the behavior over and over, I'm never going to get better. So I think this is where the line has been drawn in the sand for the organization to say that, you know, the next person that we hire, we are going to give them maybe a little bit more authority than they have had in the past. And now, what does that mean, Lance? I don't know. Does that mean that he's hiring and firing staff within the building? Does it mean that he's going to be, you know, doing other things that the other general manager never did? I mean, is he going to be making sure that the guy running the the gate at the front parking lot is the guy that's supposed to be there? I don't know. But the fact is that I think that things need to change, and I think that's where it needs to go.
Well,
it has to go to that guy.
I didn't mean to cut you off. The example that I'll give you is, if you recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you maybe remember it differently, but when Dave Gettleman came in and he took over at the tail end of 2017, and as he got his feet wet and spoke to individuals in the building, he made changes to the scouting department. They did not retain everybody, if you remember that, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Now, if people want to say, well, you want more bigger, massive changes, it depends on if you bring in a new GM. One of the things that I would ask, right, if I'm bringing in a GM, the first thing I'm asking that general manager candidate, Jeff, is give me your vision, okay? Give me your what your game plan is in terms of when you were to come in, if you were to get to this job, what are your priorities, and what beyond maybe even the roster do you think needs to be tweaked in order for you to function accordingly? I mean, that to me is a simplistic, basic question. I want to hear the vision. Let me hear the vision. And
100%.
What it sounds like is that something that I can digest? Am I willing for him to maybe part ways with other individuals, whatever it may be? But that's what you ask. And if you don't allow them to have the freedom and flexibility to do that, then probably it did not fit with the vision that you have to empower somebody to do that, would be my guess.
100%. And I think that there's going to be somebody that comes in there and blows them out of the water with their vision and their plan on how to do things. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, this next person is, this is so crucial. This is so crucial in the future of the New York Football Giants. It really is, because, you know, they've hit rock bottom. And now you've got fans, you've got people that didn't, you know, if you looked at how many people were going to that game the other day, you know, there's a lot of things that go into this whole mess, and it has to start with the next general manager and moving in the right direction and doing things to let him change it around. He's going to and when Dave Gettleman came in about the scouting department, he revamped the scouting department. He also redid all the way that they rank their players and
the
their scouting
and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that's one thing that the
general
manager.
Well, that's an aspect of being a GM that you may want to change that.
100%. And, or maybe he gets in there and says, you know what, this is the system I use. Unfortunately, it's just some of the players that they were using just didn't work. But the system in itself, as far as how we rank things and how we do things, I'm keeping this.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe I don't believe in having, you know, the regional scouts here or whatever. I believe in, they need to be, we need to hire five more scouts or whatever, you know, because, or we need to have some more analytics in the building or what have you. These are all things that have to be discussed. And, but to your point, Lance, when that person, whoever it is, sits in front of the Tishes and the Maras and says to them, here is my plan, short term and long term, okay, this is what I feel I can do for this organization. And by the way, this is what you haven't been doing. Because I don't want to hear what you can do. I take that back. I want to hear what you can do. But why don't you tell me what I haven't done? Other than not win football games, but why am I not winning football games? Why have we done it this way?
The root of the cause.
Like, give me the root, right? So I want, and if somebody hits it spot on, I'm going to be pretty impressed. Like, you know, but I'm just wondering, like, Lance, how these guys get some information to come up with this stuff, you know. But if they're in the business, because most of these guys are player personnel people, they understand how the Giants do things, the Pittsburgh Steelers do things, the Carolina Panthers. They have an understanding of how these organizations run their departments.
People talk, correct.
People talk, yes. Exactly.
Well, and also, remember, a lot of the players, Jeff, and this is what you were getting at, if you look at some of the potential candidates, not everybody was a GM. They're looking for this to be their next step up. They've been embedded in the college scouting department all these years, so they know the players the Giants have picked, right, in previous years, because they scouted them themselves. So they could look at, if I gave them, look at the 2017 sure. draft class, tell me what you think. They know all those guys because, once again, they were part of those right. draft cycles and so forth. So I think that gives them intel. And then from a coaching perspective, normally, and I think GMs do the same thing, they pretty much have a binder that they put together in terms of their analysis, and a coach will do film study. A potential GM candidate's going to break down film, because remember, Jeff, I don't just want to hear about what you want to do in the draft and the scouting department. If I'm hiring you as my GM, I want you to sit down, look at my 53-man roster, and tell me what you think of my 53-man roster and what direction we have to go. Because maybe you sit down and you go to ownership. These free agent signings are eating up too much cap space. You're not getting the bang for your buck. I want to go in a different direction. Maybe that's the feedback you get. So to me, it goes well beyond just the draft and the structure of the scouting department and so forth.
Yeah. And by the way, and I know we're running a little bit late, but by the way, you have to look at the cap situation too for the New York Giants.
Yep.
I mean, that's another situation that the GM's going to come in here and he's going to be like, oh my goodness, you know what? We don't have much money. If I get this job, we're not going to have much money. We're not going to be able to make a huge splash in free agency. So I got to come up with some money, and this is what I've done. I've looked at your roster. These are the players that I don't think are worth a, you know what, and we're going to cut salaries on these because I got to come up. First of all, I got to have enough money to sign my draft picks, and then the other thing is I need an offensive lineman or I need a defense, whatever it is, but and that's what he's going to tell them, and I want to hear that. I need to hear that. And I don't care if that GM comes to me and says, you know what, of your 53 guys, there's only 19 on this roster that I think really we should keep. The rest of them, just goodbye. You know? So
sure.
If that's the way it's going to be, that's the way it's going to be.
Let's real quickly try to see if we could squeeze in one more caller who's been holding before we wrap up shop. We got Donnie in Queens on the line. What's happening,
Donnie? Hi,
Donnie. Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'll make it quick for you.
All right.
You know, I called in last week. You guys let me rant quite a bit about, you know, aligning the new GM with the new coach. And
right.
One thing I left out about that is, you know, Jeff, you're kind of speaking. This is a team in a tough cap spot. You know, there's going to be some turnover in this roster, and you kind of feel like there might be a lot of young players playing some prominent roles. And if you just look at the offensive line, other than Andrew Thomas, you know, we really can't know who the other four guys are going to be. And I figure a lot of draft capital would be in there. The offensive coordinator spot has to be filled if Joe Judge comes back. The offensive line coach has to be filled if Joe Judge comes back. Again, do we want to now put these new players that we're going to be bringing into the program already in a spot where it's very likely in year two they're learning a new system, they have new coaching. If you think of all the elements add up, it just makes total sense to have a new staff come in that can be here for years. You know, it just doesn't seem like this is a team that's going to be able to compete next year. And I'm a fan, and I know how we're all thinking. None of us are going to hear that Joe Judge is coming back after a 4-5, 6-win season next year. So please, Mr. Mara, just do the right thing. Let's clean house here. Do the right thing. Create a chance for stability. Not where in year two we're already having the GM dismantle a coaching staff. I appreciate you guys. You guys do a great job giving fair, balanced, honest viewpoints. I know it's a little tough sometimes. You work for the team, but I think you guys do a really good job of covering the team without the sensational. You know, you turn the radio on, they're talking about how it's a slap in the face to the Giants that Dave Gettleman got to take pictures on the field. Like, some of the stuff is just utterly ridiculous. They want the man hung, you know, in front of the mask.
Yeah.
So
I mean, forget about him being a human being.
All right,
right?
Donnie.
I mean,
appreciate the phone call.
Thank you, Don.
Yeah, have a great day, guys.
You got it. One thing I'll just add before we wrap up is you hit on the Denver Broncos situation. So that was one way that they went about their business. Then I've brought up, and I'm going to emphasize it again, because I think real tangible evidence is important, not just having hypothetical conversations. The Lions, Jeff, they went at it similar to Denver. They brought in Bob Quinn. Martin Mayhew was their general manager. Jim Caldwell was their coach. They kept him, and he put together 2 9-7 seasons, okay? 9-7 season, yeah. Okay? It's not too shabby. Now, despite that, Bob Quinn decided to bring in Matt Patricia, and we could look in hindsight, that was not necessarily the best decision because Jim Caldwell at least had that team surfacing within the playoff picture. Matt Patricia failed to do that. But the point is, I think there's been examples in NFL history where sometimes it has worked out, where they retain the coach, you give the coach a chance with some better personnel, and then there's been other situations where you brought up, Jeff, where you give the GM leeway, the following year he gets rid of the coach, and then you're back to square one, which is what the caller was saying. And that's a dangerous road to go into, because here's a situation where if you bring in a young quarterback, or you have a young quarterback, now you're asking him to learn a new offense, and this and that, and then the cycle continues. So I could give you an example where there's been really good ones that worked out and then ones not so much the case. I don't know if there's necessarily one blueprint that says you have to go this way.
Well, I think that one thing that the ownership, that they have a belief in Joe Judge, okay? They gave him a 5-year deal. And, you know, they want to make sure that I've told you this before, when you look back at the 2 years at Joe Judge, and you can make all the excuses you want in the world. And by the way, the Giants are horrible. They're just a bad football team, right? But there are some, you know, things that have happened that really, for a young football coach who was 38 when they hired him, has never been a head football coach, okay, with COVID 2 years ago, no off-season program, and then you hit this year, you got the COVID problem. There's a lot of things that, as a young coach, that he was put up against that was really not fair to him. But you had, you know, it doesn't matter. He still had to go through it. But I believe that management has faith in Joe Judge, that if you can get a new general manager to come in here and make some personnel decisions and some coaching decisions as far as the offensive coordinator and what he wants to do with his staff, typically those guys usually hire their guys, right? I mean, there's going to need a new offensive line coach.
Well, you'd want them to hire their own guys,
I mean,
too.
You have to, right? So with that in mind, you know, who's to say that because of that, that you get some good players or decent, better players than you had this previous year? Daniel Jones comes back healthy. Saquon Barkley is healthy. The defense is in pretty good shape. And the next thing you know, you rattle off 8 or 9 wins next season. There's nothing – that's you're not saying that can't happen. And then there would be some symmetry between the new GM and the head coach because they just won 9 games. And by the way, if you're winning 9 games, you're flirting with the playoffs. There's for sure. And so I think that's the scenario that the ownership wants to see if the GM has the ability to say yay or nay on Joe Judge. But I think they want to keep him because they want to give him a chance to succeed. That's just my take. And I think that's what will happen. That's
certainly
just my opinion.
No, a lot of decisions that the Giants are going to have to make in the upcoming weeks. The first priority, though, is they have to now find a new general manager. That's the first domino before then that new GM makes any future decisions with respect to the structure of the organization and the team. So that is going to wrap up Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll be back up and running again on Wednesday at 12 p.m. Eastern. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Jeff, always enjoy the conversation. I'll speak to you later on.
Yep, you got it, Lance. Thank you.
Sounds good. We appreciate everybody for tuning into today's episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live. It's part of the Giants platforms everywhere and Giants.com/podcast. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest throughout the course of the offseason. We'll speak to you Wednesday right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a good one.